Hi, everybody. This is, once again, Eve Harrow and Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. It is a beautiful day, meaning that it's pouring outside here in Israel, which is wonderful for the week of planting that we're going to have to celebrate yesterday's holiday of Tu Bishvat, the birthday of the trees. Today's February 12th, 2017, the 16th day of Shvat. 5777. And to celebrate the song of the trees, or what Naomi Shemer in her famous song Shirat HaSabim talked about, the soul and the expression that all of us have, and through nature, we're all like that. We all have a special song and a special soul. I've invited this morning Esther Cameron, who I've met over the years. She has been on some of my bus tours of the Land of Israel, and she is a poet, and not only that, but she heads the Duranda Review, which is an online and print poetry magazine in English. And so I'm delighted to have her with me today, and I think it fits in with the beautiful week of nature in the Land of Israel and Zionism. So Esther, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today on the Land of Israel Network.
Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you come into poetry? What's your history?
Okay, let me first mention that this year, Tu Bishvat, the new year of the trees, coincided with Shabbat Shirah, the Sabbath of the Song,
right,
which is where they read the great poem, the Song at the Red Sea.
Az Yashir.
So it's a especially appropriate.
Right,
time.
When there's this open miracle and God destroys our enemies and everybody dances and plays music and is very joyous. We are always distressed at the loss of life, but quite happy when we're saved from what have been our loss of life. And certain things never change.
Right.
But yes, it was a beautiful, and everybody stands for that portion reading in the synagogue yesterday, and it was very beautiful. Okay, so the week of song.
Right.
So how do you fit in here? How did you get to Israel, first of all?
Ooh, boy, is that a long story.
All right, we'll go to the short version.
Okay, I am a convert to Judaism. I started out being very much devoted to poetry, which I've written since I was quite young.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. middle of the United States. I'm especially attached to the classical Western tradition. I feel that this is a tradition that has strengthened the individual and the community, has inspired the individual to connect with the community and contributed to an appreciation of the creation as well. When I started...
The Western tradition of literature.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. When I started to think about becoming a member of the literary world, I was put off, really, by some of the trends in recent literature. There seemed to be a sort of compulsion to be ironical, to detach oneself actually from the community, often a very negative attitude towards life, certainly no religious faith. This bothered me a lot, and I didn't see where I could fit into this literary world.
Were you a person of faith before?
Not really, mm-hmm.
But something was bothering you.
Yeah, here. Right. I just was coming from an appreciation of beauty and appreciation of life and, you know, and ethical values, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up doing my dissertation on the person whom I consider to be the last great poet of the Western tradition, Paul Celan, who was also a Jew and a Holocaust survivor. And through that, I became interested in Judaism.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because he was influenced by Kabbalah and Hasidism. I mean, he was
mystical Judaism.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Even though he himself was, you know, was somewhat detached. He was quote secular. He was writing for a Western audience, but still something came through, and I sort of followed the light.
Wow.
And when I showed the rabbi who gave me my Beit Din something that I
converted you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Who gave me something that I had written as an attempt to crystallize what I had learned from Paul Celan and from his sources. He said, "Oh, that reminds me of Rav Kook." And so I started so I have taken an interest in Rav Kook and his vision of a renaissance of Jewish culture in the Land of Israel that would in which poetry would play a role. So
just for my listeners, yeah. I'll interject. Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook was a great rabbi of the last century. He was the chief rabbi of the Land of Israel before we had a state. He died in the early 1930s. He was a tremendous human being in that he really integrated both more of the literary Judaism, if you will, the yeshiva world, which was one side of his family, and the mystical Judaism, the more Kabbalistic side, which was another side of his family. Very, very unique individual and very much known for accepting all Jews from wherever they were coming from and feeling that it was together that we could write this song of Israel, not rejecting people, not judging people, feeling that everybody had a part in this renaissance of the Jewish people in our land. And so a lot of people got upset with him for that because he didn't see things exactly their way. But in retrospect, there's a tremendous appreciation for this man and for his greatness and for his love of everyone. So to have the rabbi who brings you into Judaism say that some of the things that you're thinking remind him of Rav Kook is quite a nice compliment, I just have to say.
Well, it's inspired me a lot over the years. You know, it's been a great encouragement. Part of my attempt to represent what I consider to be the true voice of Western literature was the founding of a magazine. It had another name at first. It became the Deronda Review. The Deronda Review is named for George Eliot's novel, Daniel Deronda.
Boy, did that set me back like 40 years when I saw the name of the review. I was like, Daniel Deronda, I haven't thought of that book in a long time.
Right. It's the last novel by a great Victorian, of course, non-Jewish novelist, in which the hero discovers that he is a Jew, returns to his roots, and makes aliyah, basically.
Or we think. It's not really clear, right?
I think it's pretty clear.
And it's got some Kabbalistic elements.
Yes,
it's an interesting book.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
I named it the Deronda Review in the hope that it could form a bridge between the Western poetic impulse and the Zionist vision. So we accept poetry from non-Jews as well as Jews as long as this is something life-affirming, as long as it respects the dignity of the divine image in the human being, as long as it's a celebration of creation and not, God forbid, something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is what the Deronda Review is supposed to do.
Which also reflects your life, coming from a not Jewish background,
right,
and then adopting it yourself and coming into
exactly,
and finding out you have a Jewish soul, if you will,
right,
somewhat like Daniel Deronda does.
The Deronda Review can be accessed online at www.derondareview.org. This time we have an especially interesting issue. We have a feature devoted to the paintings of Yoram Ra'anan, which were destroyed in those fires in November.
Last month, right.
But there are many very beautiful images of these paintings that you can still see online.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked poets to write poems about these images, and that's the first section of this magazine.
Beautiful.
It's a really wonderful tribute, I think, to a great artist who, you know, may he find renewed inspiration and, mm-hmm. and give us more masterpieces.
So how did you come to Israel?
Well, I figured, you know, once I became interested in Judaism, I gradually figured out that that was where it was at.
You make it sound so simple.
Well,
if you're going to be Jewish, you should probably live in the land of Israel. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And then this is what you do full-time? You write poetry and run the magazine?
Well, I wouldn't say I write poetry full-time. Poetry is something that comes out of various concerns that
mm-hmm.
I have in my life. I do other things. I do editorial work. I concern myself with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely, I guess, the central thread in my life, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So when you come on my buses, when I run trips for One Israel Fund and we go around to places that most people don't get to or a little maybe wary of getting to on their own or don't know the way around, to places deep in the heart of Judea and Samaria, what are you looking for?
Well, I want to meet the people who are out there and who are really our front line.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, you know, think of ways that I can support them.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see what they're building. I want to see the landscape. I want to hear your accounts of the history, which are really always very interesting and inspiring. I have to tell you that on your last trip, when you told us that we were all soldiers, I really felt very fired up by that since then. And it has inspired some of the things that I've written since then.
Mm-hmm. Do the places inspire you? If you go,
definitely.
Like where? I know some people say, like in the hills of Samaria, suddenly they.
Oh, that
something
synagogue, built on Scully's farm, of the stones of the place. This little synagogue about the size of my bedroom in Maale Adumim,
right?
Which always has people learning in it, and built from local stones. I mean, This was just an amazing
right.
thing to see.
It's putting, you know, they say that about the Western Wall, that there's certain stones that are alive, right? And
well, there are a lot of stones that are alive.
And stones can be used for different things. You know, they can be used to attack people, which unfortunately we have on our roads all the time, Arabs throwing stones at cars, and they can be used to build a building where Torah is learned and where Hashem is brought in, literally into the world. When it comes to, give us an example of something that perhaps that you've written recently. Can you read a little bit of something? There's a lovely book that you gave to me called Fortitude, or The Lost Language of Justice, Lost Language of Justice, Poems in Israel's Cause. So tell us a little bit about that book. Anything favorite that you have in here? Anything that speaks to you?
Okay, the book itself, that was written during a time when I was not living in Israel. I'd gone back for various reasons, including family reasons, but I was following what was happening and writing about it. In these writings, I went back to a style that derives really from the poetry that all American children used to learn in school before modernism hit. And it was, as I say, a style that inspired the individual and helped them connect with the community. And so here is one example of what I wrote. It was during the 2006 war when I visited Israel and was also reading various things about what was going on. It's called Between the Straits. I heard a voice from deep within the land say, "Tell them so that they will understand. Our enemies are many. We are few. This is the land that we were driven to. Among ourselves we are divided, and those who betray us have the upper hand. They have denied the teaching we were taught, have given away the lands that we had bought with our sons' blood, and have abandoned those who trusted us to the fury of our foes. And though against all this we loudly spoke, we now must share the guilt, being of one folk. Aye, and the blame for what must now be done, lest we be altogether overrun. Yet still we clasp the treasure we were shown, which was not given to us for us alone. Could you but see all that we have in store, you would hold fast to us, and would ignore the voice of our deluded and our weak, who at your courts for vain advantage seek. Hold fast to us, and stem the rout of the good. Let not the Sabbath's light go out on earth, and leave it prey to utter strife, lest rage expunge all trace of human life. Yet there is one who will not let us fail at last. Hold fast to us, we shall prevail. We shall come through this strait to mend the earth, and peace will come, and freedom have new birth."
Who's the we?
Us here in Israel, and of course our friends abroad.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking. In the end, I went back to the Gettysburg Address, right?
Really?
Yes. There's something about the new birth of freedom, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that he says.
Yes, not a bad poet himself, Abraham
Lincoln. No, he was also a poet, mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln.
So you know, you straddle a lot of worlds, Esther, the non-Jewish world and the Jewish world, the Western world and Israel. You're back and forth. The literature of the West and biblical literature. You have an interesting perspective. But what I see as kind of a theme in here is really faith. That's why I asked you who the we is. The we is
right.
People of faith. It's people who see a different power at play through all of this.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to read one other thing.
Sure.
Which is actually not my poem. It's a poem that I translated from the Yiddish. A friend of mine, Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Feier, Zichrono Livracha, wrote this poem after the Six Days War. He himself was in the United States at the time. He was to make Aliyah a few years later, and this poem was sort of a preparation for the Aliyah. And he didn't ordinarily write in verse. He wrote free verse, but this time the intensity of the experience of the reunification of Jerusalem led him to choose rhyme and meter, and that's a very interesting point that needs to be made. People often think that writing without rhyme and meter leaves one freer to express one's thoughts spontaneously and so forth. But I have found, and on this occasion Dr. Fire found, that a really intense feeling demands actually some sort of formal structure for it needs a vessel, as you know, as they say in Kabbalah, in order to express itself. So I'm going to read this poem now in English. It's called, in Yiddish, it's Das Volk weckt sich auf, the people awake. The people awake from a terrible nightmare of exile and horror and grief, and surge toward the wall once of wailing united, their longings converged in relief. The age when we wandered is over, is dying, and no one is mourning and no one is crying. 'Tis the western wall which the people now grips with the hands of our heroes, with eyes and with lips. From Galut, from the corners of earth, Jews are straining to wrest themselves free of the nations restraining, with clenched fingers writhing against iron nets in the dark prison house of the grim Soviets. Outcries long stifled from here and from there rush toward the Kotel, our triumph to share. We feel them, dim shapes which Talesim enfold, in our midst by a touch of redemption consoled. Now arise, reassembled, bones crushed by fury, who had waited long ages for news, now they hurry, and those who in death had made holy the name have gotten their orders to come home again. After centuries of hope, after centuries of trust, in these days of testing surmounting the past, the locked doors of silence swing wide in creation. The way is paved homeward for Israel's nation. The nations are muttering and grinding their teeth. Without understanding, in fury they seethe. They are scorched by the light that illumines our way from the Mediterranean to Aqaba's bay. Now in their assemblies the haters arise with murderous faces and mouths full of lies. They wield words like weapons to wrest back the lands that were hallowed to us out of our rightful hands. They torture the truth, and God they contemn. His redemption command has no meaning for them. Our victory and comfort they cannot endure, so they lie to themselves. We can even the score. But today we are learning the meaning of those ancient words in the scrolls about history's close, the manifest sense of the old prophecy that lies wrapped in the pledge of our God's constancy. David's son has been summoned. He comes to explain, stepping over the threshold to tell it again, till the teeth-grinding nations at last understand that these 6 days of victory were wrought by God's hand.
Wow. You translated that from the Yiddish?
From the Yiddish, yeah.
How did you come to speak Yiddish?
Well, I know German. And if you know German mm-hmm. and Hebrew, you can kind of mix it together and you get Yiddish.
And you speak Hebrew also?
Yeah, I speak Hebrew. In fact, I'm writing poetry mostly in Hebrew these days.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different? I do have a feeling about the holy tongue, you know, mm-hmm. that it's in that language that one can express the essence of things. And I've gotten mixed reactions, and I don't know whether I'm really writing it with the right feel. But I relate to the Hebrew words now to more than to the English words. And in a way, in my Hebrew poetry, I've been trying to replace something that, as far as I know, has tended to get lost in Hebrew poetry in recent times, because they've also been affected by the modernism, you know, the postmodernism. Oh, we have to be ironic. We can't do pathos. We can't write in rhyme and meter. We can't express too much strong feeling, and we can't be too explicitly Zionist, you know, or people won't invite us to international conferences. I'm sorry, but I'm afraid I think that's exactly where it's at. So I'm really trying to encourage. I know that people in yeshivas, for instance, are writing poetry that is strongly Zionist.
Yes.
I haven't been able to access it yet, but I'm hoping to. Eventually, perhaps even start a bilingual Hebrew and English journal mm-hmm. for poetry that is really Zionist. You know, in the early years of the state, poetry and songs played a very important part in keeping people strong and together. People, Naomi Shemer and Natan Alterman, are the names that mostly come to
yes.
mind. And both of them were attacked right?
Mm-hmm.
By the postmodernists, right? In recent years,
for being too passionate
and
about
nobody,
Israel,
and nobody, practically nobody, seems to be, you know, at least not if you read, you know, the magazines that you find. You know, there's some people. There's some exceptions, but practically nobody is writing the kind of stuff that helped to keep Israel strong
mm-hmm.
through many very difficult times. And my hope is that if we can revive that a little bit, it will help us to keep our inner coherency and also to communicate with the rest of the world. Because I really think that also the rest of the world also needs structure and clarity and the courage to feel and to know what to think.
Mm-hmm.
And these are values.
And to be okay to think it.
Yeah.
Well, what did the
yeah.
Jewish people do? I mean, we brought the Bible to the world. We brought
right.
the Torah to the world.
Yeah.
Anyone
yeah.
who's a believing Christian today, it came from Judaism. It came from the Bible and love of God and that kind of understanding. When you spoke about the vessel, not just the Kabbalistic term, but the structure of poetry. Mm-hmm. So there's this yearning for freedom, which a lot of people have, and they confuse it with no boundaries whatsoever. That
that's
to be
right.
free means you can do whatever
yeah.
you want.
Right. Well, that's exactly what Judaism is.
A structure
is
to be
about.
Free within
be,
the framework.
There has to be a structure to,
yes.
for freedom.
You otherwise, can't paint a picture without a canvas.
Otherwise, you just sort of end up in a spreading pool on the floor.
Yeah. You're a blur with everything else.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Exactly. So within that, you can do that. So it comes up all the time, and I say this when I go and I speak, and in March I'm going to be in the States speaking both in synagogues and in churches. And it's a message that I try and get out very strongly, that the rebirth of the Jewish people in our homeland wasn't just for us. It was to a great degree for the world. Not just that it's
right.
a sign, not
yeah.
just the miracle of the Six-Day War and the fact that we're here at all, which is a physical sign of God in the world, if you will, because it makes no sense on any level. But there's something that the world is lacking right now, the freedom to feel, to be allowed to be passionate about something individually, that you don't have to be like everybody else. There can be something that makes you just feel inspired, that doesn't, that is not cynical, that you can love something, you can
right.
love a people, you can love God, and it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's
no,
something that we can bring back to the world. But first, we need to have it ourselves. And I'm sensing like an underlying theme of what you're writing here is that you're trying to bring that back to us as well. Because unfortunately, there are many Jews who have lost it, Hebrew-speaking Jews even, who have lost the wherewithal to be able to say, like, this is special and this is unique and this is powerful. Last week, I went to, there's near the Western Wall, there's a new, it's not an exhibit, but there's a 3D, there's a room you can go into and you can put in 3D glasses, and it's 360 degrees. You sit in a chair that swivels around and it takes you back into the temple.
I just heard about that yesterday.
So I went last week. I took my
to
son there.
Yeah.
I found myself, Esther, I found myself crying behind my 3D glasses because suddenly you're in the temple courtyard and they're singing.
Right.
The Levites and the priests, they sang. We're not even sure that they prayed in the way that we know prayer today, but what there was so, what that was in the temple was song. And I found myself completely uplifted, and all of this is just 3D. And I was crying because for the first time, I really deeply felt the loss of what we had, a central place where it was okay to sing to God and to sing to each other. And if your poetry and some of the work that you're doing and bringing other people in on that can bring a little bit of what we once had back into the world, then it's just the work you do is really for a blessing.
Thank you. I feel as if I should add a caveat because there's a lot that's going on in Israel that I don't know anything about or very little about. For instance, there's a great deal of music
yes.
being written. And many songs being written, which I can't follow because it's difficult for me to understand sung words without an accompanying text.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm really speaking only about the print media from
right,
you know, from
the
what
poetry.
I, you know, from what I know.
When I was young, I wrote poetry. I even won some awards in Los Angeles when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, some poetry contests, and it was always about Israel. And that was the fire that was lighting me. I have it. I found it recently. I haven't written poetry in a long, long time. The daily life and raising children and everything that I'm involved with doesn't leave much time for that. But when I found it, I thought to myself, like, it's still there. No. It's still there. Maybe one day.
Send it to me.
Maybe one day. We'll see.
Yeah.
Just a thought. Yeah. I'll add it to my list of the things that I'd like to do. But it was there once, and even as a young girl growing up in Los Angeles, this was my fire. Was Israel, was the Jewish people, was a special sense of, wow, like, I'm alive in a time where the world sees that we're not anachronistic. You know, we hung on and here we are again.
Thank God.
And we can help the world be what it's supposed to be while we're trying to be what we're supposed to be. We can all do this together.
Maybe I could mention something of mine that is really addressed to that directly and at length. It's an epic poem called The Consciousness of Earth. You can find it on Amazon.com.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, terrific. Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I think we've talked about a lot of things, you know, and I just really hope to see more and more inspiring and Zionist poetry coming from people here and abroad in years to come.
Right, I hope so too. I know that for many people come here and visit, even who don't live here, it does something to them, and maybe it'll wake up that artistic side that they didn't know that they even had. Lots of surprises for all of us.
God willing.
Okay, so I'd like to thank Ben and Tabitha and everybody at the Land of Israel Network for giving me the opportunity to have wonderful conversations like this one with Esther Cameron about her poetry and about her life. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. Write to me, eve@thelandofisrael.com. My trip in March is really coming together. Going to be in Chicago, St. Louis, Austin, Washington, D.C., Sacramento. So if you live in any of those places, drop me a line and maybe I'll get to meet you. Take care, everybody. Have a wonderful week. Shavua Tov. Bye for now. דע לך שכל עשב ועשב יש לו שירה מיוחדת משלו ומשירת העשבים נעשה ניקון של
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is at Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments. Check out their website, www.windowsofjerusalem.com. They've got beautiful 1, 2, 3, 4 bedroom apartments in the best location in the city center with the most beautiful, breathtaking views. And I mean breathtaking. I've stayed there a number of times myself. And I'm telling you, there are few places anywhere in the city where you can take it all in to this degree. The view, the location, the great apartments, plus the wonderful staff, will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com.
Hey folks, this is Jeremy Gimpel. I want you to know, if you're a non-Jew from a Christian background or just a full-fledged Christian and you want to come to Israel, the best program, tour, experience that you could possibly have is to go with Hayovel. Now, it's weird. I'm an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, and I'm telling Christians to go to this Christian ministry in the middle of Samaria. Let me tell you, there is no better experience for someone outside of the land, outside of the Jewish fold, to come into the land and work alongside the Jewish farmers of Samaria, to learn about the culture, to meet the people. It's an experience like no other, and I think it's also probably the cheapest way to travel to Israel. So go to hayovel.com.